Mini episode 738 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Football Talk in the NFL Lounge. NFL Talk for 2016 already. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your favorite football talking FDH Lounge dignitaries anywhere on God's green earth. We're going to be breaking down the AFC East landscape here, going through division by division for 2016. And Kyle, a situation where the more things change, the more they stay the same, it seems like here. You've had a situation for about 15 years where it's been New England and everybody else, and you look at the division this year, and not much reason to think that should change, I would think.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You took the word. That was my opening question.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, what a pleasure to be back in the FDH Lounge.
Yes.
How many years is it of us doing this here? Doing NFL stuff,
going back to 2011, but that wasn't on the regular coverage. The more regular coverage started in 2012. So this is the five-year point of going through as comprehensively as we have done. And, again, You've got different other things that have come into play over a period of time as well here. Some brand things coming out of that. An F the public kind of a deal from Kyle Ross, I understand.
I've certainly developed a new shtick, yes.
Yes.
By the way, two things.
Yes.
My wife just texted me, "Downtown makes me cry." We should point out that we're recording this as the Republican National Convention takes place here in Cleveland.
That may make this horribly dated based on when it goes up.
Well,
okay.
You know, people can look back at this. You know, this could be a premonition. People are like, oh, God, what day was this? Oh, my God. So much hate is what she responded. My beautiful wife is you know, such a loving person. She just can't. There must be a lot of arguing going on downtown.
There must be. So
how ironic that you and I, on such polar opposite ends of the political spectrum, are sitting down here and putting those differences aside to talk about football. Let's bring it all back. You mentioned the AFC East and this run of dominance New England has had.
Yes.
Since 2001, there have been exactly two times when they did not win the division. 2002, that was when the Browns beat them in a tie break to get the final wild card.
Yep.
And then 2008, which was the Matt Castle year.
11-5.
Well, they went 11-5 and didn't make the playoffs. So, yeah, this has been New England's division. And my question to you, I think you've already answered it, is there any reason to expect otherwise in 2016? My answer is no. Although we should point out, talk about the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's 2016. Finally over Deflategate, but it was at this time last year we were pondering a possible four-game suspension for Tom Brady. That, of course, did not happen, but it's going to happen this year.
That's right.
He's missing the first four games.
That's right.
Those first four games are at Arizona in a big Sunday night opener,
mm-hmm.
But then they get three at home, Miami, Houston, and Buffalo. What do we think New England does in those first four games, and is that enough to I'm assuming your answer is going to be no. Is that enough to make this AFC East race competitive, at least early on?
I'm a wimp on these types of things here. A split the difference. I'm saying 2-2.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't see them doing worse than 2-2 because they have three home games. They'll be favored in all three still. I don't see them losing any more than one of them. And then they could lose, obviously, the Sunday night or at Arizona. But 2-2 is the worst they do.
I would expect them to lose that game, quite frankly. The line
has moved. I believe it was initially a pick'em before the Brady suspension. I believe there's been a rather significant move, and I can look that up for you here.
Some real kind of disrespect to Arizona that they wouldn't have been favored in that game on their
own. I could
field.
Be wrong. Okay. Let's check the numbers here before we start playing the disrespect card, because that card is played so often.
I'm sure Bruce Arians would be quick to throw that down.
Yes. He also probably throw down. What was that? What did he do in the offseason? He made some dumb comment, I remember.
Oh, more than a few. I don't know.
Okay.
He says weird stuff.
I'm no longer in the business of criticizing Bruce Arians, though, because he's been making me look like a fool for 3 years. Yes, the line, I believe, did open as a pick'em at bookmaker, at least.
Okay.
Now we're looking at 5.5, 6 points Arizona's favored by.
That sounds about right to me.
Okay.
But,
anyway,
yeah.
Back to...
It's going to narrow it for the first month or maybe two of the season. But for as worked up as, again, the New England organization, all the a-holes on Boston radio who try to make a cause celebrity.
I was just up in New England.
Oh, man. They had to be horrible.
And they had these, you know, I hate the whole local news. Now let's go to the streets for the fan reaction. like, it doesn't matter if you're New England or, you know, wherever. New Mexico. They're always horrible. I mean, here in Cleveland, they're embarrassing. But these were, like, new levels of embarrassing. One guy actually claimed that, oh, just, you know, another example, the NFL trying to screw the Patriots. What?
Well, yeah, and New Mexico, as you mentioned, with a very blatant pro-Heisenberg bias, but you know,
well,
as far as it goes with New England.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say New Mexico. I don't know how many sports takes they have. I was going with the new. I was trying to come with new, and I was like, New Brunswick? New Mexico, but yeah,
you
I don't
had
know.
No idea where I was going with
yes.
that.
Oh,
but,
yeah, yeah.
You've got a situation there.
You don't make fun of Lobos basketball, I'll
no,
tell you that much.
No,
yes.
you don't.
Yeah.
No, they're very passionate
down in the
about
pit
it.
In Albuquerque.
Yeah.
You see a tough place to play for the visitors.
They're very passionate, but... It's a situation where all it really does, and again, and with the WWE-ization of the NBA over the last couple of decades, it's pretty clear.
I figured you would back off the NBA after the Cavs won the title.
Oh, it's still there. My team's benefiting from it. I'm intellectually honest enough to say that. I think this is one of these things, too, where, to be honest with you, Goodell sees the same things we do in terms of a gap with the Patriots and the rest of the division, and maybe to a certain extent, post-Manning the rest of the conference. This makes it more interesting. This is whatever.
That's why he
did it. First of all, no, I do think Brady transgressed. I do think
you
bust up your cell phone. You know, we're in Watergate territory here, folks. You know, my man, Pat Buchanan, once told Nixon to burn the tapes. This was the equivalent of burning the tapes in this instance. But it's a thing where I think Goodell was all too happy, even though Brady deserved this. It's still a situation where, let's make things more interesting, shall we? This is a very David Stern-esque thing, even while it is the right thing to do. It's both things at
the
same time.
Roger Goodell's a pretty odious human being. That's been well established.
Yeah.
The idea that, Roger Goodell got this right, I don't think anybody's saying that. All right, so New England. Let's take a look here. We talked about their run of dominance in the division. Where's a season-by-season record here? Usually that.
While you're doing that, I'll just mention that they made some interesting – they always make interesting moves in the offseason. You put somebody like Nate Washington in there, you know, he may just have enough juice left in the rind. We do know that, you know, the vertical passing game is one of these things where, you know, again, in the Super Bowl season, Brandon LaFell for a period of time was consistently able to fill that role. But that's the one thing that Brady really hasn't had on a consistent basis since Randy Moss. And I'm not here to tell you that Nate Washington is the guy to do that. But that's been one of the missing elements for New England over this period of time. And one of the things that, again, they're going to look to fill it, I think, internally.
They're a plug-and-play team, though.
They are.
They're just
play.
A well-run organization.
Right.
Unlike, you know, some of the other teams we're going to talk about this in this division. New England, since the 2002 year where they did not make the playoffs, have won 10 games in every year.
Mm-hmm.
They have not won fewer than 12 since the 2008 Matt Castle year where they went 11-5.
Wow.
So, the last 6 years, they've gone 12-12-12-12-13-14.
So, anti-Browns is what you're saying.
Yes. Do we think they get to 12 again this year? They did. Now, remember, we talk about a potential for 2-2 start.
Yeah.
In 2014, they were 2-2. Remember, Trent Dilfer went on his soapbox and, like, wrote him off, and then they wound up 12-4 anyway.
I just think, again, and this is going to be one of the themes of what I'm saying going along, is that I see a year of a decent amount more parity, I would say, and to where New England may lose some games where you think on paper they maybe should have it. Even beyond that 2-2 start we're projecting, I'm more comfortable saying 11-5, so I think that they probably don't make it there. I will tell you this, and again, this is not an apples-to-apples thing when you're talking about winning 12 games in a season going back over a period of time, because the league expanded in 1978 from 14 to 16 games. Prior to that,
well, I only go back to
12. But here's what I'm saying. On a winning percentage basis, that might be the best streak in the history of the league, because you win 12 games – you know, math alert, that's a .750 winning percentage if you win exactly 12 out of 16. That run of 12 or better wins, winning percentage base is probably best in the history of the league. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. And then for me, when I go back now to make it fair, I only go back to 02. You know, we've talked because that's when they went to the current divisional format.
That's right.
New England draws the AFC North and the NFC West for out-of-division opponents. With the non-conference, that obviously means two good teams.
Yeah.
They do draw Seattle at home with off a bye, and Brady will be back. That's midseason.
The FDH Lounge most anticipated game of 2016. We have that on our rankings, even above Denver, Carolina. I did a ranking of the most anticipated games. Yes.
AFC North is kind of three hard teams in Cleveland. By the way, Brady comes back for Cleveland on the road week 5.
Well, it's a good thing for New England because they were going to need him for that game.
I'm still going to go 12-4 for New England, even though there are some signs that they could regress. They weren't dominant last year. They were still very good, but they were 8th in yards per game differential, plus 35. But as a frame of reference, Denver was 72.4.
Yeah.
Close games. New England was 7-4 last year. That's a lot of close games. They lost one, obviously, in the AFC Championship.
Right.
And they did outgain opponents, I think, a 10 of 16 overall. Unfortunately, I didn't write the last week down in my spreadsheet that I have. I had them 10-5. Didn't they lose the last week, though, to Miami? They kind of phoned
it in. They did.
Okay.
They did.
So I just think that until proven otherwise, until, you know, Brady just kind of deteriorates the way we saw Peyton Manning do last year, you just can't pick against this team. I've done it before, thinking, maybe they won't get the 12. They just get the 12. It just makes a lot of sense. I don't think they're going to be the top seed.
Mm-hmm.
More on that later. But 12-4, and they'll be one of the two teams that gets a bye.
Well, one of the things, too, is for a couple of different years there, we were talking about them the same way we did Baltimore before they won the Super Bowl, and then, ironically, things kind of did catch up to them after the Super Bowl. But remember, it was the theme with both teams. They're just about due. They're just about due. It's always about the facts on the ground. And this is the division they play in. And we're going to talk about this, the ineptitude of the three other organizations in this division. And the fact that they that cannot be overlooked in all of this. Sorry, Chowd fan. A big part of the history of your run has been the other three teams, to varying degrees, screwing the pooch for 15 years, trying to catch up with you.
Oh, I think that's so huge with... I've talked about this, I think, before in the program, the importance of what division you're in.
Yeah.
It's funny that you called them the anti-Browns earlier, the Patriots.
Yeah.
Because the Browns are the only team, and they're an inept organization. We'll talk about them later on. But they're the only team in the league that can claim to be in the same division as three well-run organizations.
That's Browns. Right.
While as the Patriots are probably the only one who can claim to be in the same division as three poorly run organizations.
Great point. One of the things also, too, and something that could, and again, and relatively speaking, when you're talking about the Patriots being in the division they're in, when we say get tripped up, we mean in the AFC playoffs, because it's not going to happen before then. But one of the things that could happen, you talk about them being a plug-and-play organization, which is true. Flip side of that is, plug-and-play, it's rare over a period of time they've drafted a guy like Jerod Mayo and put him right in there, and he's delivered results. Normally, it's veteran signings, it's ring chasers, it's what have you. So that's a veteran and, again, older makeup when you see things like that. Like a Nate Washington, who I mentioned before, who, like I said, we'll see what he's got left in the tank. My guess is at least situationally a pretty decent amount, and having some other guys in there to take the steam off him. Particularly when you got Gronk lining up in there and Julian Edelman, you can't really lavish a lot of attention on a guy like Washington, which should allow him to flourish at least a little bit. But you're talking about an older core of guys year to year. Now, the ones that prove to be liabilities, they don't make it to the next year. But within a year, that's always a thing that can kind of trip you up, because teams can get old in a hurry in this league. Again, yes. New England won't have it in time to lose this division. They pretty much, it would take Brady breaking his neck. And this is a scenario again.
Jesus.
Well, and I mean, we talk cross-sport analogies. The Cavs will not win the Eastern Conference next year, only if LeBron breaks his neck.
Stop kind of the with same the thing. Neck breaking. I don't like that.
Okay, well, that's just my point.
Can we just go with an ACL injury?
ACL injury, okay. Whatever you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it. That's the closest analogy here. Tom Brady with New England, he'll be in there for the last 12 games, presumably, and that's all they're going to need to win this chode division, quite frankly.
They were sixth in overall DVOA last year, fifth on offense, 12th on defense.
Okay.
They were hidden stat.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing this from Football Outsiders as well. Obviously, Football Outsiders is the one responsible for DVOA rankings. They were third last year in yards after the catch.
Okay.
Always important. Well, a lot of that's Gronk because he's hard to bring down.
Yeah, but that doesn't surprise me, because with a quarterback like Brady who puts it right on the numbers, that's one of the things you're always looking for, mm-hmm. is the ability to hit a guy to where, I mean, you know, like back in the day, somebody like Kelly Holcomb throwing the ducks that he did, where you would make like a fair catch sign underneath the ball when it came down. You're not going to advance anywhere once the ball comes to you, right?
Yes.
So Brady hits the guy. So, again, no love for Tom Brady for me personally, but he does that. He enables the yak by where he puts the ball and allows you to keep moving.
New England's current win total, 10.5. You think over? You said 11, over?
I'll say narrowly over.
Okay, I got 12, so I'm saying over. It's not my favorite bet, though. It's not one that, every year we do this, I recommend certain wagers. This would not be a recommended one, though, even though I really find it hard to believe that New England would only win 10 games. I really do.
Yeah, I don't see them regressing to that point.
Who do we want to go to next in division? How about Buffalo?
Might as well, because I've got them tied with another team, and you got them next on the food chain.
Okay, yeah, I like Buffalo this year. So let's go over kind of a three-year history of Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, if you recall, I came on this program. We did this show, and I said 9-7, and they'll make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They went 9-7, but they did not make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Last year, despite the high-profile coaching move, bringing in Rex Ryan, I said that they would not be as good. That was kind of an against-the-grain call.
Yeah.
They were not as good last year.
Right.
Particularly, and this was the surprise, on the defensive side of the ball. Rex Ryan inherited a defense that was number two in the league, I believe.
Right.
And people were like, oh, my God, can you imagine what he's going to do with that? And they fell off a cliff.
Well, and
there was the Eric Mangini patent, and I know you hate this.
Yes.
When he's like, oh, I can't win with this. These aren't my guys.
Right.
He doesn't have that excuse this year.
Right.
I think there's no way. I know that you have even less regard for his brother, Rob, who's coming aboard. There's no way that a Rex Ryan defense will be as bad as Buffalo's was last year.
Right.
And something to watch is that offense was surprisingly good. They have issues staying healthy. But if the offense can stay healthy for Buffalo, I think they make the playoffs this year.
Here's the funny thing. What that was akin to was with the Browns 2 years ago, Brian Hoyer comes out there. Remember the situation that year was supposed to be, this defense could be respectable, but this offense is going to be historically bad. And then you get through a couple of games and everything is turned on its ear. It's the offense that's carrying the team. They get off to a 7-4 start. You go to last year, you would have assumed if the defense was going to be that bad, they would have been contending for the first pick in the draft. And Tyrod Taylor, again, credit where credit's due, because I'm like the rest of the world. I'm sitting here going, are you crazy?
Well,
what do you see in this guy?
Yeah, but we talked about this, I remember, last year.
Yeah.
That was the right move over the retread, other options they had.
I guess.
Because it's...
because they were so bad, the other options.
Yes. I mean, when you look at, retread options, it's better to go with an unknown.
Right.
It just is.
It is. It is, but in light of them not bringing in anybody that was any better, I think that's the thing we were all second-guessing.
Tyrod Taylor did not play poorly last year.
It was surprising.
It'll be interesting to see if it was just a blip or if it's a try.
Well, and an early nugget for fantasy football this year, he is a hugely undervalued guy at quarterback. He's still 14, 15 on a lot of these quote-unquote experts draft boards at quarterback. I'm going, did you watch him play last year? I mean, I'm not projecting the same thing again necessarily, but for a guy who was statistically probably the fourth or fifth best quarterback last year, depending on which system you're on, that's a big drop to pick him to be like 10 spots, 11 spots worse than he was last year. I don't see it. But it's a thing where, again, you've got a good base to build on with what he did offensively. Then you get to, again, some of the other players and their health is an issue. You know, are you always going to get the best out of LeSean McCoy? Sammy Watkins, there's times where he looks like the guy that I was convinced he was going to be out of Clemson, and then there's games where he disappears or is hurt or whatever. So the pieces are just there. One of the things that is weird about, like, this defense and everything like that, I'm with you in expecting better things there, but when I look at the genetics of the Ryan family, okay, I'm going to go old school on you here. I'm going to go back to Buddy Ryan. And I remember when Buddy Ryan was coaching the Eagles and Jerry Glanville was coaching the Houston Oilers. You talk about
two very overrated head coaches.
They were. And do you know why? Because their teams were sloppy. They'd have turnovers at the worst times.
Yes.
The inconsistencies, ups and downs. I don't know if you remember this, Kyle, but I'm going to cite this to you. There was a Monday Night Football game in 91.
I don't remember this.
Houston and Philly. And I remember going in. I was like, this ought to be some kind of shiznit show. And it was. I don't think I ever saw a game with, like, more turnovers, more sloppiness, more whatever. Watch, somebody will go on Football Prospectus and show me.
I'm going right now.
Okay.
I'm going right now. I want to know right
you're,
now.
You're
going
to tell me that my memory is faulty. But I remember that game being so sloppy and such a shiznit show and just being so awful. And that's the thing about anybody in the Ryan family, is that it appears to be a genetic thing, because Rex Ryan's always been the same kind of guy as a head coach. Rob Ryan, of course, you see that kind of inconsistency up and down from his defenses. That is when they're up, and you know that I don't think that his defenses are up that often, even when the statistics will claim that they are. But it's a sloppiness that's just genetically bred there. And I don't, you know, Buddy Ryan, RIP, he just passed away. I don't mean to be disrespectful to the architect of the 46 defense and the 86 Bears and what have you. But as a head coach, it's undeniably true. Nobody that's an Eagles fan can deny what I'm saying. As far as it goes with Jerry Glanville in Houston, that was kind of self-apparent as well. And the way that Rex Ryan's career has gone in the time since, and that you're always going to have that with them. And it, you don't have, I'm not saying everybody needs to be Tom Landry, where you have like this even keel kind of approach to their team, but these wild ups and downs that you get with a Rex Ryan team.
Yeah, and I think it actually helps them. They're coming in with less fanfare this year. Like,
right.
You know, he's not guaranteeing anything. It just seems that, you know me, when a stock is down, I like to buy.
Right.
When a stock is high, I like to sell.
Right.
And I feel the Bills stock is a little bit down this year.
Right.
When necessarily it shouldn't be. Last year it was too high.
Right.
That's what I'm doing. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, go against the grain, quite frankly.
That's a good point.
Hold on. I'm still looking up that game.
I'm trying to find that game myself.
I'm on profootballreference.com. So
I am too.
I'm gonna find it first, Ricky.
1991 standings and teams.
Yep,
stats.
I'm on 91 too.
Okay,
I'm on 91.
We're racing. We're
I'm
in a
on 91.
Race, buddy.
I clicked on the Houston Oilers.
We're in a race.
I clicked on the Houston Oilers.
Here we go.
They were 11-5
Monday,
that
December
year.
2nd. Here we go. Box
I think
score.
The Eagles. Although that was the year the Eagles had that incredible defense.
Yeah, 13-6 was the final.
Yes, it was, and it was a Monday night game, so that's very good.
All right, only one turnover for Philly, five for Houston. So I remember there were six total turnovers
okay,
in that game.
Okay, there you
game.
Go. Very good.
Yeah, that.
Very good.
Just in looking at, well, it's just the old, and this was me being in a sports bar that night. It's, I wasn't even watching it that closely, but I'm just like.
Of course, Al Del Greco was kicking for the Oilers.
Yes.
Roger Ruzek. Well, didn't we? That right? Wasn't that we had to have gotten at that time? Who framed Roger Ruzek from Berman?
Probably,
right?
Yeah.
Right? That had to be on his. That had to be in his shtick. Who framed Roger Ruzek?
Although I do know from that period of time that Hartley, I like Dykes, never made an appearance.
Okay, now that's uncalled for, and you know it is. I'll tell you what.
Jim McMahon and Jeff Kemp at quarterback for the Eagles? That's old school.
I'll tell you what, man. Pretty easy win if you had the Eagles plus 6.5. Under, even easier, was 42.
Yeah. Yeah, that. But when I think of, like.
Every turnover for the Oilers
yeah.
was a fumble.
Yeah.
They fumbled five times.
Like, when I think, like, the sloppiness bowl of like two teams. Again, there have been games in NFL history with more turnovers than these six, but this is the one that we always have something that sticks in our mind, right? This is the game that sticks in my mind. But this sticks in my mind when I think of the Ryan family, because it's indicative. It's the ups and the downs, and it's I know five.
It's the opposite of Belichick, what we just talked about.
Yes, well, exactly, and that's why again, as much as I loathe Belichick personally as a good Browns fan, it's still one of these things where that kind of even keel of a Belichick, a Tom Landry, a whatever, the stability versus what you have from Rex Ryan. So when you're talking about, well, their defense really underachieved last year, I say you're going to have that. It's Rex Ryan. You're going to have peaks and valleys that you don't expect.
Well, that kind of offended me, the way you mocked my take.
I wasn't meaning to give you the dumb guy voice. I guess I just...
That was very
that
offensive
was, that
me.
Was like muscle memory for me to go into the dumb guy voice.
Very offensive.
I apologize.
Well, for the record here, they were 24th last year in DVOA. Ninth offensively, though. So there you go. It was a weird season. I'm going to stick by my guns, though.
Okay.
In an AFC that I just think is pretty weak this year, you mentioned earlier that parity-ridden.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly think the AFC will be more parity-ridden than the NFC this year.
Okay.
I think the Bills compete for a wild card, and maybe we'll snap that. Remember, they've got the longest streak. It's 15 years now.
I think they'll be in it just because I got them at 8-8, and 8-8 I think will put you in it until December.
I got 9-7.
Okay.
The sports books have, as I had 18 pages open.
I'm going to guess 8.5 is probably where they're going.
Oh, they have 8.
8, okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
I feel I like Buffalo more than the average person, so I feel pretty comfortable going here.
You're asking me to pick red or black. I guess I'm picking green if they're saying 8.
Always bet on black.
I'm betting green on this one here. I don't see them going above or underneath that.
I mean, it's just weird, though. I mean, you've got to agree, although you said it in a mocking tone.
Yeah.
I think you confirm this, though, and we're in agreement. The defense is going to be a lot better this
year. Of course it is.
They were top five the 2 years before Ryan arrived.
Of course it is. Okay. And the scenario for them making the playoffs, which is not a hard one to conjure up, is the defense gets better and the offense solidifies at least most of their gains.
Yeah, I mean, if the defense gets better, but then we find out Tyrod Taylor is, you know,
yeah,
a hot pile of garbage, then it probably won't.
It's a
wash. Their game plan is offense stays surprisingly good, defense improves.
Pretty much so, yeah, pretty much. I'm going to guess that you probably have third in the division, the team that I have tied for second at 8-8.
I just wanted to check the Bills' schedule to see if there's any quirky thing. So obviously we already talked about the
AFC
East draws
tease.
The AFC North.
That's right.
And they draw the NFC West.
So
for them, they get San Francisco and Cleveland at home, which is pretty key because those are two, obviously, games they'll be favored big
should,
to win.
Should be layups.
Yeah.
The other games, yeah, I mean, we talked about that with New England,
they
right?
get Jacksonville at home, too, which
okay.
I know we're probably going to differ okay. about Jacksonville a little bit. And then the AFC West team that they draw is at Oakland the following week. So they've got the two trendy teams back-to-back.
Yeah, see, I'm not liking their chances with this schedule because you look at a team like New England, right? The common divisional games that they're going to play in terms of AFC North, NFC West. For New England, those five teams, if you're New England,
eight.
You want to? There's five that matter.
Though. Oh.
You have the three in the AFC North. You have the two in the NFC West.
Okay, gotcha. Oh,
You aim to go, ideally, 3-2. 2-3 wouldn't be a killer, particularly being in this division. If you're Buffalo, you'll get those five games, and that's kind of a thorny mess. If you're lucky, you go 2-3 out of those five games. If you're lucky.
They open at Baltimore.
Okay.
They have to go to Seattle on Monday night, which is tough. Arizona, they host them.
Okay.
In an early start time.
Okay.
And then Cincinnati, they have to go there. Pittsburgh, they host late in the year. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, those games will be tough, but the rest of the schedule, not including the two games versus New England, very manageable. They'll have to do well on the rest of the schedule. They'll have to win almost, you know, the vast majority of those games.
I'm standing by 8-8 because I don't see them feasting on the rest of the schedule. I see them struggling through those games, going better than .500 against the rest of the schedule, and probably coming out right at 8-8. Now,
did they sweep both the Jets and Miami last year?
I think they
might have. Because that means they would have lost both times to New England. Because they went 4-2 in the division.
Yeah.
And I don't remember them beating New England last year. They didn't.
Okay.
So, yeah, they beat the Jets twice, and they beat... They hammered Miami twice. So, yeah, wow. So that'll be interesting. You figure they're not going to sweep them both again. Ooh,
right.
I'm kind of talking myself out of Buffalo over here.
I mean, well, there's not a big difference between you said 9-7, I said 8-8.
Maybe they're the team whose shot takes it, because I think they played New England without Brady.
Yeah.
So maybe they're the one who beats New England at home.
Could very well be. But
that's a huge game for them.
The team that probably makes the most sense for us to talk about next, because I think we agree on who last place is going to be, New York Jets. I have them tied for second. I'm guessing you have them third in the division. I got the Jets at 8-8.
So I'm higher on the Bills than you.
Yeah.
Not by much.
Okay.
But I'm definitely lower on the Jets than most people. I think this is a clear regression team. Now,
okay,
you look at the numbers last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were top non-playoff team in DVOA. In terms of yards per game, they were actually fourth in the league in differential, plus 51.7.
Right.
But, as we know, they lost that Week 17 game to Buffalo and did not make the playoffs. They jumped from 4-10 wins last year. You know me. You know my rule. That means they're heading back in the other direction. Plexiglass principle.
Right.
The quarterback situation is obviously key here. Even if Ryan Fitzpatrick comes back into the fold, at this point, I don't see him playing as well as he did last year. Now, if he doesn't come back, I don't like the choices at all.
And I'll tell
you
what.
Geno Smith is not what you want.
No.
And then, you know, Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg, those were bad picks. Wasted picks.
Yeah, well, I
don't like either of
those.
Those
are guys that once upon a time in college had a pretty good pedigree. I mean, and they were kind of buying low with mid-round picks. I don't have a problem with that. You go with a guy who once upon a time looked to be – I mean, I'd rather have Christian Hackenberg than freaking – God, I can't even remember his name anymore. The chode from Michigan State, who's just awful. Went to the Raiders. Connor Cook. Connor Cook is poop. I'd much rather have Christian Hackenberg than
Now,
Connor
why
Cook.
Is Connor Cook poop? Because he beat Ohio State several times?
He's a guy who locks on to receivers worse than Vinny Testaverde. I mean, he's just awful. He's a guy who wasn't voted a captain there at Michigan State,
Jesus,
notwithstanding not a
that's
leader.
That's supposed to mean something.
Well, exactly. It shows what everybody thinks. Right? Connor Cook, we're in Northeast Ohio. It's not a popular sentiment. We went to Walsh Jesuit, but I'm going to say the unpopular thing in this territory, that he is poop. I'd much rather.
In this territory? Are you getting your football and wrestling shows mixed up here?
Christian Hackenberg at least has upside. I mean, rookie.
By God, you wouldn't say this about Connor Cook in big-time wrestling.
I don't know that Christian Hackenberg has any upside for this year. But I agree with you. Geno Smith's a downgrade. But here's the other thing, too. Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? That was the career year akin to Derek Anderson 07, right down to the disastrous game/pass at the end there. He mirrored Derek. He was doing a Derek Anderson 07 cosplay for 2015. It was like a creepy sexual thing almost, the cosplay around.
You're making some very troubling comments so far, and we're only one division in, not even.
It'll go worse.
I mean, broken necks, like you know, Derek Anderson and Ryan Fitzpatrick having sex.
Kinky
I don't want to think about these things.
No, I'm saying that he was role-playing Derek Anderson.
Are they right not to bring back Fitzpatrick at that price that Fitzpatrick wants? Because it's funny, because everyone says, oh, you got to have a quarterback, and that's true. But we're going to talk about a lot of teams as we go through these divisions who I'm going to make the point – are actually hamstrung by the fact that you, quote-unquote, need a quarterback, and they overpaid them.
Well, we're going to talk about this subsequently.
Would it be the worst thing in the world for the Jets to regress this year and then maybe have a shot at a better franchise quarterback in the draft next year?
That wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing, but I'll tell you this, that we're going to talk about this more because of the ripple effects with a number of teams, interestingly enough, all in the AFC, because you have Brock Osweiler going from Houston, or to Houston from Denver. You have the situation there in Denver, and this is a direct result of that. The Brock Osweiler contract is one of the most consequential in the recent history of the NFL because he reset the market. We've seen guys getting that kind of jack before. But even when you're down to the level of an Andy Dalton and Alex Smith, those are at least guys that say what you will about them. They've made the playoffs.
Well, what does that mean?
Brock Osweiler. Well, but again, though, he's more unproven than they were. Now, look, he may have better upside. And I'm not I don't think we know. I don't think we have any idea how it's going to go with Brock Osweiler in Houston. If he's going to become a Pro Bowl quarterback or if he's going to become a bust, that's one of the bigger question marks in the league. But for a guy like him, as unproven as he is, a handful of games under his belt to get that deal, you had a ripple effect in Denver, the way that it reset the market. Denver wasn't going to go near that. Denver wasn't going to offer Ryan Fitzpatrick the money that Brock Osweiler got, and the Jets were not going to offer him that. This is a direct result of Brock Osweiler resetting the market. We talk about this in the NBA offseason, the way that the salary cap exploded and all these funny money deals and the way that everything's been reset. To a certain extent, one man
I root
the
for
same
the players,
thing.
By the way.
I
root for the American worker.
Well, I'm going to root for the Australian worker, Deli. I'm glad he got the deal he got from Milwaukee, particularly because the Cavs may have gotten somebody better in Kay Felder. But that's another story for another day. The way that it goes with the NFL is that we are dealing with the fallout of this here and of the Jets thinking. And this is, you know, a guy like you, Kyle, who certainly understands Marx and Engel and that kind of angles and all that kind of stuff here. You know, it's a thing where I'm surprised a guy like you isn't calling Geno Smith a scab because he's the guy who, like, we're going to throw him out there to take Ryan Fitzpatrick's job. We'll just pay him whatever. I'm surprised you haven't gone with that as a pro-union thing, Kyle. I can tell I caught you off guard there.
Here it was. I just wanted to look at the Jets turnover margin from last year.
You didn't know he's going to go that way.
Then you're fucking quoting the Communist Manifesto. The Jets, like, I'm going to leave that alone, by the way,
okay,
like the Patriots and Bills were both in the black when it came to turnover margin. New England was actually +7. Both Buffalo and the Jets were +6. It's weird because the Jets were very much a good team last year. They just didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
But I just think the jump from 4 to 10 wins, we see the inevitable regression with the quarterback situation. I actually only have them at 6 wins this year.
Okay.
And to be honest,
that wouldn't shock me.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually lower.
That wouldn't shock me.
I just think that a lot of things went right for them last year, and this year, not so much.
Well, part of it is with me, too. I'm giving a decent amount of respect here in terms of the internal culture of the team, and that I think that you're looking at a much better situation, because again, you had had by the end of the whole, and this is what happens again when you get these volatile type coaches like a Rex Ryan, a lot of times by the very end it's just a thing of now we got to rebuild the locker room and whatever. Todd Bowles, I think, has come in and has set, I think, a pretty good culture there with this team. And the reason I'm picking them for 8 wins, notwithstanding the execrable quarterback situation, is number one, again, the quarterback is going to have some pretty decent targets here. And Brandon Marshall, who I called a year ago as being a guy who wasn't nearly done yet, and he proved me right. Eric Decker, I'm not going to say that they're going to reproduce what they did last year, but I just think that Todd Bowles, there's a net under this team that wasn't there with Rex Ryan, and a floor, if you will. So yeah. If it was 6 wins, that wouldn't shock me. I'm going to say 8 wins.
I got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I did all my projections this year. I told you this off air.
Yeah.
I wanted to get them all done even before the draft,
mm-hmm,
because I think the draft and I think all the summer chatter is just noise.
Yeah.
And I don't think it plays, quite frankly, I don't think it has much relevance is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
On the next season. I just don't. I mean, I think if it does, it's things you can't foresee. It's, you know, it's things like Seattle getting the bargain basement deal with Russell Wilson or something like that. Like,
right.
Nobody could have envisioned what that turned out to be.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's really good just to kind of come to your decision before that. And I'm saying this now because I was really convinced that Buffalo would be a little better and the Jets would be definitely worse. And it's funny, the numbers don't necessarily bear that out the way you want,
okay,
the way that maybe they bear out improvement or decline for other teams in the league. But I'm going to stick to it. I think the Bills, while you think they're basically the same, last year I said they'd be about the same,
mm-hmm,
team. And the Jets wound up being a little better than I expected.
Right.
This year, I think the Bills are definitely going to be better than the Jets.
Let me ask you this.
Leaves only one obvious team.
You talk about off-season stuff here, free agency, whatever. Were you as befuddled as I was, and not necessarily at the Jets signing of Matt Forte, but the reaction to it of like, OMG, they got Matt Forte. Like, Guys, Chris Ivory had a really good year last year. Like, were you as surprised as I was? Everybody's like, upgrade, upgrade.
Yeah, I'm not.
That was weird.
Matt Forte could be good, but I don't. I'm just not for.
I mean,
again, I guess I'm disavowing my good friend Karl Marx, as you would say, but I'm just not a huge fan of investing a ton of money into the running back position.
Look,
in 2016.
At Forte's
for an
age,
older running back,
yeah,
too.
The Bears let him go because of his age. If they're lucky, it's a lateral move. Chris Ivory had a great freaking year. So
interesting here, too. Like the Bills and like you, odds makers have the Jets at 8 wins.
Okay.
Interesting, though. The juice is huge on the under in this instance. At minus 162. That's basically the book saying we don't want to move this down to 7.5. But we're going to make you, you know, pay a little more to us if you want to go under 8. That's kind of interesting to me.
Well, with the Geno Smith pessimism out there, that's why they're doing that.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
It absolutely does. So we move now to the team that I'm guessing we're both picking for last place in the division. All right, maybe you're not. I don't know. Maybe
I think they're actually going to be pretty close. No, I think they're going to be pretty close to the Jets, actually.
Oh, all right. Well, I've got them at 7-9 as the last place team in the division here. I told you. I think it's an 8-8 league this year.
Do you know what's interesting?
What?
I just said, don't tell me that I'm going to think, don't look at me and say they're going to be a last place team necessarily, but I have them with a worse record than you.
Maybe it's kind of gutless, but I'm picking a lot of teams, you know, to be clustered around 8-8
this year. You've also obviously looked at the odds makers quite a bit because they have them at 7 wins, the Charlotte Dolphins.
Well, and the other thing is here, too, I do, like much of what I am ascribing this to is – I am somebody who believes, albeit this could be a job that really kind of taints him for the long run here. Your first job can be important. I do think Adam Gase has a very good mind. I think he's very well prepared for a situation. But, again, as we talked about off-air, organizationally a dumpster fire.
This is one of the worst organizations in the league. They deserve to be
right now
mentioned in the same group with the Browns.
Right now in sports, quite frankly. We're gonna try and stay away from any of Brent Grimes' wife's specific complaints about them.
Yes.
But you know, it's a god awful. Whenever
other than the Browns, is there a worse run organization right now in the league than Miami?
I'm gonna look at a list of teams here.
San Francisco moving from Harbaugh was really bad.
Well,
Oakland and Jacksonville in the past have been bad, but I feel that they're kind of on the right trajectory now.
I think San Francisco is going to have another power struggle with Chip Kelly because for as much as he's like, I don't want that responsibility anymore, he says that now.
Yeah. So when we're mentioning you in the same breath as San Francisco and Cleveland, that's not good.
No, I mean, I'm looking all around the league here. There's a lot of uncertainty still in Detroit and Tennessee because of the pending potential sales of the teams, but Miami's got no excuses. They have no excuses whatsoever. By the way, and I don't know if this has been settled recently here, but I was reading about this about a week to 10 days ago, that with renovations to the stadium, they may not be done by, like, November. This team may be playing games in Orlando. Have you read about this?
No.
This was on the table, like, 10 days ago, that the Hurricanes and the Dolphins may be having to temporarily relocate.
That's like shades of the CFL. Who was it? There was one team last year that had to play all of its road games in the CFL. I know this from the industry I'm in. had to play like they had to play only on the road the first. It was like either Hamilton or Winnipeg up there.
Okay.
So, wow, that's pretty Bush League, man.
Yeah, I don't know if that's still the case, but it does tie into what we're saying about the organization and a lot of the dysfunction that's there.
With organization. And right after I talked about the CFL.
Thank you. You caught that. You're a smart guy. I'm going with the hockey.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
Wow, that was very good.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that being caught by you. But that's...
I pay attention sometimes.
You know, but we're at a point now where, again, it is now completely make or break with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I was high on him at this point last year, and that was dumb.
Well, again, Adam Gase got the most out of Jay Cutler. You might maybe retroactively be able to give him a little bit of credit for Brock Osweiler playing well last year, because even though he wasn't in Denver, he was with Osweiler the first couple of years. So he's got a little bit of the quarterback whisperer reputation. I still think that there's a ceiling on him that's not a great one. You go from Lamar Miller to
Arian Foster. It's funny because I actually have,
Foster.
Although they're very opposite ends of their career spectrum, Cutler's been in the league. You know, kind of, it almost seems like forever now, and Tannehill is still relatively young. I kind of have them in the same place where it's like, all right, well, what are you going to do? Like, there's not this way better option that's easily attainable for either team right now. It's like you're kind of locked, stuck with what you got.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Sue contract on defense is really eating up a good chunk
of
the cap.
Yeah, that's the problem with Miami, especially on defense last year. It was the stars and scrubs approach, which has been proven time and time out not to work. If you have – it's – what you don't want in not only this league but any professional sports league is to have below replacement level players on the field.
Absolutely.
Because that will then drag down your stars. So when you overpay for one guy, you've kind of got to shortchange yourself at a different position. And that's what we saw with this defense, because this defense was not – what it was supposed to be.
Not very good, notwithstanding the passion of the man who used to rock the medium shirts out there on Sundays. Dan
Campbell. Don't tell me we're going to talk about this idiot still. I had forgotten about him.
You know, say what you will about the man, he at least looked like a coach from Central Cast.
God, here we go.
That's a guy where my dad would say he looks like a football coach. You know, not like a Romeo Crennel standing there comatose or whatever. I mean, that's...
Looks like
a football coach, yeah.
They were, in fact, 25th. Indeed, this was not a good football team last year, Miami.
No, this just...
They were 29th overall in DVOA, 22nd on offense, 25th on defense, 24th on special teams. So they really didn't do anything well.
No, and I don't think they're going to do anything particularly well.
Including playing well in their own division. They were 1-5, and if memory serves me correct, my computer's locked up right now, so I can't look. Maybe you remember this, though, because you follow this team.
Okay.
Didn't they beat New England the last week of the year, Miami?
Yes, they did.
So that was their one win. They were 1-5. So you figure maybe they're a little better in the division, and they finished, what, 5-11 last year or 6-10?
They were 6-10.
I think they might do 6-10 again.
And, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I got him at 7-9 just because, again, if nothing else, I would say respect for Adam Gase, which, again, it's kind of the Todd Bowles thing there with the Jets. I think that they may snag a win or two more than they might otherwise just because of their coaching. But that's just a stab right now. There are so many teams in 2016 I don't have a real good feel for. And the three teams not named New England in this division are among those. I tend to classify them more as mediocre. You tend, in the case of not Buffalo, but the others, to classify them more as somewhat poor teams, if not bad. So that's where we kind of differ. So, all right, well, that's our look at the AFC East.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.